Ever notice how we're drowning in data buzzwords these days? Big data, open data, linked data. It's everywhere. But here's the thing. How often do we actually stop and ask, what is data really?
It's like we're so busy analyzing it, visualizing it, and arguing about its implications that we forget to examine its fundamental nature.
Exactly. And that's what we're diving into today with Kingsley Eidhen's Understanding Data. Get ready to go beyond the hype and uncover the essence of what makes data tick.
Kingsley gets right to the heart of it by defining data as observation expressed in reusable form. It's a simple statement, but it perfectly captures how we transform what we observe into something we can actually work with.
So it all starts with observation, noticing things, making connections between them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm observing you right now, noticing that killer pocket square you got on. That's data in its rawest form, Eric.
In a way, yes. You're identifying distinct entities. Meet the pocket square and perhaps even noting a relationship between them. Kingsley calls these identifiable things entities. Could be a person, a place, a song, even this very podcast episode.
Each a separate definable thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like drawing a circle around it in the real world and slapping a label on it.
Precisely. But data gets really interesting when we go beyond just labeling. Think about the relationships between entities. That's where the real insights lie.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Give me an example. What does a data relationship look like in the wild?
Kingsley uses the example of France and Paris. France, an entity, Paris, another entity, the relationship. France has capital Paris. See how that works?
We're not just saying, here's France, there's Paris. We're defining how they're connected, adding a layer of meaning.
And that, my friend, is where the magic happens. It's like building a web of interconnected ideas. Entities are the nodes, relationships are the threads that tie them together. But just like any language, this web of data needs structure, a way to express itself clearly.
So we're talking about a language of data. Does this mean I need to brush up on my binary code?
Not quite. Think of it as having three key parts. First up, identifiers or signs. It's how we pinpoint a specific entity. Your name, my name, a website address. These are all identifiers.
Like giving each entity a unique tag so we can reference it quickly.
Similar.
That one you know with a thing.
You've got it. Then we have syntax, the arrangement of those identifiers to create meaning. Just like we arrange words into sentences, we structure identifiers to express relationships.
So instead of a jumble of words, we get France has capital Paris.
Yeah.
Structure brings clarity.
And finally, we can't forget semantics. This is all about the shared meaning we give to those relationships. Paris isn't just a dingy white place connected to France. It holds a specific role as the capital semantics add that crucial context.
This is really making me think about how much we rely on these unspoken rules of language, even in data. Without them, it's just a jumble of facts.
And those rules, those underlying structures, are what allow us to represent data in different ways, each with its own strengths.
Okay, let's talk about those different ways.
Yes.
How do we go from this abstract web of entities and relationships to something we can actually see and work with?
One common approach is the entity relationship diagram, a visual representation where entities are shapes and relationships are connecting lines. It's like a mind map for your data.
So if our brains could create data visualizations, this is what it would look like.
Exactly. But of course, we have other methods, too. The trusty table format familiar from spreadsheets and databases is another way to organize data in a clear, structured way.
Ah, yes, the digital equivalent of neatly labeled drawers. But let's be honest, things get a bit more complex in the world of data science, don't they?
They do indeed. That's where things like RDF notations come into play. Don't worry, we won't get bogged down in technical jargon here. The key takeaway is that RDF is designed specifically for representing data on the web.
RDF, huh?
Yeah.
Sounds intriguing. Give us the elevator pitch. Why is this RDF so important?
Think of it this way. RDF is all about giving our data a universal translator. It adds a layer of machine-understandable meaning, allowing different systems to communicate and share information seamlessly.
So it's like we're teaching computers to speak the language of data in a standardized way?
Precisely. It's about moving beyond simply linking documents on the web to linking the actual data within those documents.
Okay, now that's powerful. But even with all this talk of interconnectedness, sometimes just accessing the data we need can feel like navigating a digital labyrinth.
You're telling me. It's a common challenge. And that's where the concept of identifiers as universal keys comes into play. Imagine if every single piece of data had a unique identifier, a digital address, if you will.
Like a master key that unlocks any data door no matter where it's hidden. I'm listening.
Exactly. Instead of sifting through endless files and databases, we could use these identifiers to pinpoint the exact information we need, no matter where it's stored or what format it's in.
We're talking about a data GPS. No more getting lost in the digital wilderness.
It's about creating a more interconnected and easily navigable data landscape, much like how we navigate the physical world with addresses, phone numbers, and even those plus codes I still don't quite understand.
Speaking of navigating this whole conversation, is making me appreciate how far we've come from the early days of the internet. Remember when it was just a bunch of static pages?
Oh, absolutely. The evolution of the web is a fascinating story in itself.
Take us back to the beginning. How did we go from a web of documents to this vision of a truly interconnected data web?
Well, we have to start with the unsung hero of the internet, the domain name system, or DNS. It was like the internet's first phone book, allowing us to connect computers using memorable names instead of just IP addresses.
So instead of having to remember a random string of numbers, we've got to type in google.com. Progress.
Exactly. DNS paved the way for the World Wide Web we know and love, and that's where HTTP, the Hypertext Transfer Protocol, comes in. It allowed us to start linking documents together, creating those digital pathways we explore every day.
Ah, yes, the good old days of clicking from one page to another, falling down those internet rabbit holes. But there was a limit, right? We were connecting documents, not the actual data inside them.
You're right, and that's the leap forward that linked data represents. It takes the power of hyperlinks and applies it to the data itself. Suddenly, we're not just connecting pages, we're connecting the information within them.
So instead of just reading about France and clicking a link to a page about Paris, we could directly access data about the relationship between them. Data about its history, its culture, even its best croissant shops.
Now you're talking my language. But you're getting the idea. Linked data breaks down those information silos, creating a much richer, more interconnected information landscape.
And this is where our friend RDF steps back into the spotlight, right? To make sure all this linked data can actually be understood.
You got it. RDF acts like a universal translator for linked data, adding a layer of semantics that machines can understand. It's like going from a jumble of ingredients to a recipe that tells you exactly how to combine them.
So instead of just saying France-Paris connected, we can specify the exact nature of that connection. France has capital Paris becomes a statement with real meaning for a machine.
Exactly. RDF uses a simple but powerful structure called a triple. Think of it like a mini sentence with three parts, subject, predicate, and object.
Okay, let's break out our trusty example again. What would a data triple look like for France and Paris?
Easy. Subject. France. Predicate. Has capital. Object. Paris. Just like that, we've created a machine-readable statement about the relationship between these entities.
And by linking these triples together, we can build incredibly complex and nuanced webs of information. It's like that game 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, but for data.
You're getting it. Suddenly, your calendar can talk to your to-do list, which can talk to your favorite recipe app, all because they understand the underlying data in the same way. Talk about a recipe for efficiency.
Now I'm imagining a future where my fridge orders croissants based on my schedule and dietary needs, all thanks to RDF. But if this technology is so powerful, why isn't the entire internet already speaking its language?
Well, like any good revolution, it takes time. But we are seeing exciting progress. Digital libraries, scientific databases, even social networks, they're all starting to embrace the power of RDF and linked data.
It's like a silent revolution happening one data triple at a time. But Kingsley doesn't stop there, does he? He takes us even deeper down the rabbit hole by connecting all of this back to the ultimate data system, human language itself. Mind blown.
It's a fascinating connection. Kingsley argues that the way we use language words as identifier sentences, as expressions of relationships, has striking parallels to how we structure data with RDF.
So in a way, we've been speaking RDF without even knowing it. Our brains are hardwired for this stuff.
Exactly. And that's why it's so exciting. If we can tap into the underlying structure of human language, we can create even more intuitive and powerful ways to interact with information.
Imagine having a conversation with your computer, asking complex questions in a natural way, and getting back accurate and insightful responses. No more wrestling with clunky keywords.
Think about asking your virtual assistant, "Hey, remind me to pick up those concert tickets when I leave work. And by the way, what's the parking situation like at the venue?" Simple, seamless access to information that just makes your life easier.
Okay, now I'm really getting excited about the future. But before we get too carried away with possibilities, let's bring it back down to earth for a moment. What does all of this mean for us, the everyday users of the internet, who might not be fluent in RDF or data science?
That's a crucial question. We might not all need to become data wizards, but Understanding these foundational concepts can change the way we think about the digital world around us.
It's like we're all amateur detectives in a way, piecing together clues from the digital world around us.
Exactly. Every time you type a search query, you're interacting with this vast web of data. Understanding its structure helps you ask better questions and find more relevant information. It's about being a conscious and informed navigator in this digital age.
It's like the difference between wandering through a library aimlessly and knowing exactly which section and shelf to find what you need. But here's the real mind bender. Kingsley doesn't just stop at data as a tool. He leaves us with a pretty profound thought about the very nature of data and how it shapes our understanding of the world.
It's a humbling thought, isn't it? The way we choose to represent data, the categories we create, the connections we make, it all influences how we see the world. It's like looking at reality through a lens, and that lens is shaped by the data we choose to focus on.
So it's not just about data reflecting reality. It's about data actually shaping our perception of it. Now, that's a powerful idea.
Think about it. How differently might we understand history if the data we had wasn't just from official records, but included the personal stories, letters, and perspectives of everyday people? Or how our understanding of climate change might evolve with access to real-time data from sensors all over the planet, showing us the interconnectedness of ecosystems in a whole new light.
It's like upgrading from a blurry old photograph to a high-definition video, suddenly revealing details and nuances we never even knew existed.
Precisely. And that's the incredible power of data when we move beyond simply collecting and analyzing it. It's about using data to ask bigger, bolder questions and challenge our own assumptions about the world.
Wow, this has been quite the journey. We started with the basic building blocks of data and ended up grappling with its power to shape our very understanding of reality.
It really underscores how understanding data is no longer just a technical skill. It's fundamental to navigating our increasingly data-driven world.
Absolutely. It's about becoming more critical thinkers, more discerning consumers of information, and more aware of the choices we make and how we use and interpret data.
It's about recognizing that data is not just about numbers and algorithms. It's a reflection of our observations, our relationships, and ultimately our shared human experience.
And on that note, I think it's time for us to step back and let our listeners ponder these profound questions.
Indeed. Go forth and explore the world of data with open minds and a healthy dose of curiosity.
You never know what hidden connections you might uncover. Until next time, keep asking questions, keep digging deeper, and most importantly, keep the data flowing.